You're listening to a Cripple and Co. production.
Welcome to A.G. Parker's Cabinet of Curiosities, an inclusive podcast focused on queer, disabled and marginalised artists and their art. You can support the podcast by signing up to Patreon. And oh my God, guess what? There's a new Patreon tier. If you've ever wanted to ask a writer for advice on drafting or a drag king for tips on wigs, you could now join the Curiouser and Curiouser tier. This lets you ask the talented creatives on the podcast something you're dying to know about art or life or anything, really. And I'll ask the next most fitting guest for their thoughts. This will help me to do things like buy transcript software to make the podcast more accessible. And eventually, if I get enough of you, I can pay my podcast guests. What? I know, wild, right? Find out more on the Patreon page. You can also buy me a coffee on Buy Me a Coffee, which you can find on my link tree. And now, on with the show. Today's guest is Alex Callahan, who is a non-binary poet from Yorkshire and part of the Bone Down Literary Affinity Group. They specialise in wit, whimsy and dinosaurs. Welcome to the podcast, Alex.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yay, I'm excited to have you. First off, dinosaurs?
Yeah. So I write quite a lot of poems about dinosaurs, which started because when I was going back to uni after lockdown, I started taking this like emotional support dinosaur plushie with me everywhere. And it kind of seeped into my writing as well. So my final project that I did at uni was a poetry collection called Dinosaurs in Space, where like the dinosaurs go to space, but then while they're off adventuring, Earth gets hit by an asteroid, and that's like, you know, the asteroid. And then it ends up being like an exploration of grief. So like my dinosaur writings went from like, ah, fun, whimsical dinosaur to like the weight of grief through little guys.
I love that. I love that so much. That's wow. I mean, that sounds like such an interesting collection to read. That sounds so good. What kind of dinosaur was your, I have to know. Yeah. What was your plushie?
A Stegosaurus.
Oh, good choice. Good choice. There's a lot of love for the Stegosaurus out there.
There is, and I'm happy about it. I don't think the Stegosaurus is my favorite though. My favorite is the Ankylosaurus.
What's that?
He's the one with like the kind of hammer tail looking thing.
Ooh, oh, they're really cool.
Yeah, and his spikes, they're not just along his spine, but like all over his back.
Oh wow. Oh no, I do. Yeah, I know which one you mean. That's amazing. For whatever reason, my partner and I decided that he is a velociraptor and I'm a brontosaurus. No, a diplodocus. So I get bought like little brooches of diplodocus. Which is a thing. I know, dinosaurs. This podcast is not about dinosaurs, but it can be for this one episode.
It could be.
It could be. Like, why not? Cool. So yeah, let's get into it. So you're part of Bone Down. How did you get into Bone Down?
So I had seen Caitlin around, Kate McKenna, because we've both gone to On the Mic at Left Bank before. Kate had actually spotlighted there, but we hadn't really met properly. But among her friends, I was known as the jam poet and a little bit as the dinosaur poet because I have this poem that I read at Left Bank called The Jam Room, which is a really like absurdist poem about this is the room you go to when you eat jam so you don't get like jam everywhere. And so I was sort of known amongst Kate's friend group at the time. And then I'd seen Kate at Left Bank as well. And then we met properly, I would say, at the Ilkley Literature Festival, well, Fringe Festival, which was, oh, I've forgotten what year. What year are we in? We're in 2024. So that would have been 2022. Yeah, So the summer of 2022, and Kate was there, and I was really happy that I knew someone else, because I didn't think I'd know anyone. So we were talking properly for like the first time and kind of found out we were big fans of each other,
Oh.
which was really nice. And Kate's book was coming out at the time. Now Say It Back, Benke Publishing. And
Little ad there, I love it.
yeah,
Now
little
written
plug.
off.
Yeah, now Written Off Publishing. And Kate mentioned that her book launch was in a few weeks. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, I'll go to Kate's book launch. I hope you can't hear my cat in the background trying to get into the room.
I can't, but I mean, that would definitely add something. I'm all for
Okay.
cats.
Well, I was gonna have her in the room, but then he was being a bit of a bitch.
No, I get it. I've locked my dogs outside.
Okay, sorry about that. Where was I at? Oh yeah. So I went to Kate's book launch, and I ended up reading, which wasn't planned, but someone else didn't turn up, and I was like, look, if you want to, seeing as you've lost a person, I can stand up and do a couple poems. I brought some with me. And they were like, that would be great. So I did that. And at the time, Kate was like, oh yeah, I'm planning a thing, but didn't really say too much about it, but was like, look out on my socials and whatnot. And when I announce it, I'll let you know. And then I was given a poster for the first ever Bone Down, which was September 2022. And it was, where was it? It was at the bandstand on in Woodhouse Ridge in Leeds. And I lived in the area. And when I told my partner about it, I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to this poetry event in the woods. He was like, that sounds like you're about to get trafficked. But I persuaded some of my housemates to go with me. We turned up, and it was because it was the first ever one. Really, all they had was like a start time and a couple of spotlight artists, which meant it went on for hours, like hours and hours, like into the night. It was really dark. We couldn't see a thing.
I mean, yeah, if you give poets a stage and no time limit, that's kind of what happens.
Oh yeah. And it was really magical, and a lot of people came and were sort of coming and going. Like, you wouldn't have really been able to count later in the night because you couldn't really see who was around you. But then the second one was then October, and I attended that as well. But and then after that one, I was helping carry some stuff back to Kate's house. So I was already like helping out anyway, even though I wasn't a part of the planning process at this point. And I'd already been advertising it to all my friends and to people at uni, and a few people who I'd like mentioned it to are now like regular boners, as we call them. And after the October Bone Down was when Kate asked me and Eve, a former Bone Down committee member, to be part of a committee to help put on Bone Down events, which was really exciting because I hadn't been helping out with an expectation of becoming part of something, or even becoming part of a community. I was just finding a new poetry event to attend because all the venues that they were doing were local to me. I liked the idea of telling poetry in parks. It was really exciting.
It's an amazing idea. I love the sound of it.
Oh yeah, I mean, I still don't know any other event like it.
And so you've been involved in like organizing this almost from the very start. How have you seen it progress and develop?
First, it was the monthly open mic, which we've only recently stopped doing because we've decided to do it quarterly instead. But we started doing the events indoors as well at the Leeds Poetry Studio, which having an indoor venue did seem like a kind of a big step. It felt more like official, and it also opened it up for more people to be able to come, from an accessibility point of view, because the poetry studio, has a ramp for a start. It's got
Brilliant.
loo. It has a kitchen. So if we did, because at that early on we were making soup to bring to Bone Down. Well, I wasn't.
Oh my
Yeah, which was partially because we were outside. The idea was it's really cold.
gosh.
We've got you coming out in like December. The first December Bone Down, I was spotlight artist, and it was the coldest night of the year. We were in a gazebo outside and it was freezing, and that was when we were like, we need to go inside. Like we can't do all of them outside. And thankfully the poetry studio was a free venue. I'm not sure if it's still open, but it was a temporary venue that was open, and we were like, we are going to do the events here until it's warm enough to go outside again. But so that's what we did. And when once me and Eve were involved, that opened it up to different people hosting as well. So I hosted the January Bone Down, so 2023, which was a big step for me personally as well, because I'd never hosted an event before. And since then, I've hosted not only Bone Down, but uni open mics as well. And it was like a big push for my confidence as well.
Yeah, I mean that sounds amazing to go from like carrying some stuff back to Kate's house to event making and then hosting other places as well. That's incredible.
Yeah, I'm really thankful to Caitlin for not only for letting me be part of Bone Down, but she's constantly supporting and promoting not only the committee members like me, but everyone who's a part of the Bone Down community.
I feel like that's something that's really like prevalent in the poetry, or at least like the cool poetry communities that I know anyway. People kind of want to give each other a hand up or push them to do something or get them involved in some way and further their skills, which is like it's really beautiful to see.
It's really lovely. I think because poetry is such a niche thing, that the communities that are created are very personalized and specific to each area. So whilst there is crossover, like people from different poetry communities know each other, which is a lovely thing in itself, that there is that it's so tight-knit. I think the individual communities created are so lovely. Lots of people who, well, there's a lot of people I wouldn't have met if not for Bone Down, who have been spotlight artists at Bone Down just because they were part of the community, or have been asked to perform at different events we've done, or to use their work in workshops that we've done. And that was when it was just events. And then we started doing socials to really like expand. Well, expand that sense of community. And then in summer of last year, we made a zine, which was
Woo.
really exciting. So that was really then the culmination of all the community work that we've done. Because we had the Discord going and a WhatsApp group, and so we could all like talk to each other and workshop each other's poems and share what people have been knitting recently and what people are eating, like really just whatever people were wanting to talk about. And then it was finally like, okay, guys, submit your work. We're making a zine of all that Bone Down has been so far, basically.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Really special. Because it wasn't just poetry as well. We had visual submissions as well, which was really great because we wanted it to be a celebration of the whole community. And I think quite a lot of the people who'd attended at first, we had quite a lot of people from the arts uni. But what was really lovely is that it wasn't just uni students, like it expanded to more than that. And the zine was able to be a celebration of all of that and all the people that we'd attracted to come to our silly little events.
That's wonderful because you know, as you say, you've built these events, you've built this community, but then to also have something that's kind of like a little time capsule of all that you've achieved so far is such a special thing.
Yeah, it's really lovely. And being able to actually hold the zine for the first time was really special.
Yeah. And do you find that Bone Down is quite a good like gateway drug for people who aren't poets to get into poetry?
I think so. There's quite a lot of people who've come and then haven't read, but then I've sort of worked on them over like a few Bone Downs and be like, so you're gonna read this time? You're gonna read this time?
Yeah.
Because sometimes we've got people who write in private but don't write for other people.
Yeah.
And sometimes we can persuade people to not necessarily share the work that they're writing for themselves in private, but to see what they can do with their writing, that can make it outward facing,
Yeah. Well,
which is really.
that's really interesting and like probably like really, you know, beneficial and healing to quite a lot of people and again like skill developing, which is very cool.
Yeah, I mean, since Bone Down started, my mum started writing poetry,
Wow.
which is really cool.
Does she come to Bone Down events as well?
So she's not based in Leeds, but she did come over for the, I can't remember which Bone Down it was, but we did a Bone Down event at Lovell Park, and my mum came and she performed for the first time ever. She'd been writing for since lockdown, actually. We started a poetry Thursday thing in our family group chat, and if
Oh.
just do like silly little rhymes and stuff like that. But mum really caught on to it, but she hadn't shared it with anyone who wasn't family,
Yeah.
and so it was really special that she was able to come somewhere where she felt comfortable enough to read, in a city that she doesn't really know as well.
Yeah.
And my mum was actually, she was able to get in the zine as well. It was all anonymous when we did all the deciding who would get in.
Yeah.
When we did a zine launch, which had, well, there was lots to it. We had musicians performing, we had a banjo player, a couple of different bands, a noise band as well, which had some visual elements. We had a workshop in the morning, a frog making one, which was fun. And then we had an open mic and then the zine performers themselves. And it was really lovely to be able to have all the zine contributors there and to see them perform when some of them I'd only heard on paper. It can be such a different medium,
Yeah, absolutely.
which
So
is really interesting overall.
it is really interesting, and I like have these conversations with people quite a lot about the difference between page poetry and then performance poetry, and it's always really interesting to hear somebody who I've only ever read on the page actually read their work, but equally seeing you know, a spoken word or someone I consider to be a spoken word poet and their work in a book, and it's like, wow, okay.
Yeah, and there's like a delicious crossover between the two, where sometimes there's a piece of work and it works as a spoken piece and as a page piece, but then the layout on the page really reflects the way it's spoken,
Yeah.
which is, I mean, I love that. But then sometimes you write a piece and you're like, this is not spoken. This would not work. I've tried as well. So sometimes I write a piece and I'm like, yeah, this can be performed, and then I read it out and I'm like, no, it can't. It
I
will
mean,
stay on.
it's always good to try. It's always good to try. I definitely have like some poems that, you know, I think, oh, this could work as a, you know, a page poem. And then an editor will review it, and I'll get an email back saying, yeah, we don't want 5 pages worth of poetry. Thank you very much. It's brutal, shot to the heart. But do you tend to stick to one genre within your poetry, or do you kind of like dabble?
I think I'm a dabbler. I wouldn't even say I have one specific style. Because I do a lot of rhyming poetry, and originally that was all I did. I did quite silly stuff, normally had a punchline. But since going to uni, I started branching out into prose poetry. And now I feel like I have at least three different styles, but I quite like that, and I quite like that in a spoken word set as well, because I think sometimes if you're only speaking to your audience in one voice, and it doesn't change a lot, I think they can become quite complacent, and they kind of let your words wash over them rather than actually listen to what you're saying. Whereas I think if you mix it up a bit, I think it sort of jars them enough to keep them listening, to like hold
Exactly.
attention.
Yeah, it keeps their attention a bit. And do you find your, so you said you do like poems with a punchline, which I love. Is that, that's probably quite a good way of getting people that think, oh, you know, poetry isn't for me. I don't know anything about poetry. I don't like it. I just think about, you know, Shakespeare's sonnets or something. Is that a good way to kind of get them involved as well and appreciating poetry?
Definitely. I think being able to show the range of what poetry is really important. When I'm hosting, I like to do a poem at the start before the open mic begins that people who might have only interacted with poetry in school, or, well, school probably the only way they would have interacted with poetry. A thing that they won't have necessarily expected to come from a poetry event. Because my way into poetry came from reading children's poetry. Because I read a lot of it when I was a kid. I've always been a big fan of Lewis Carroll, Alice in Wonderland. The Walrus and the Carpenter is possibly my favorite poem to exist. And even in my poems that aren't as rhymey and aren't as silly, I think you can still see the kind of influence there. I think it's really important to show people that poetry doesn't have to be complicated in language or in form. A lot of people, when I if I'm trying to get them into poetry, the first thing you sort of say is, well, how do you speak? What way do you think in? Because a thing I found when I've been working with my mum on poems, is that she'll sometimes try and write how she thinks a poem should sound. And quite often I'm like, you would never talk like this. Like, why have you written that? And I do think that's really important that people know, especially if the only poems they've seen are like poems from like, 100 years ago. That style of writing is going to be very different to contemporary poetry, and very different to poetry like 20 years ago. Like, it's language is constantly evolving, and poetry is going to evolve with it.
You're so right, yeah.
I still feel like I haven't read enough contemporary poetry, because I was reading a lot of children's poetry. We did poetry in school. I still feel like it's quite difficult to read poetry for me, which as a poet is like a crazy thing to say. But I really have to make a conscious effort when I'm reading poetry to be like, okay, I'm going to read this once, like I would just read a fiction book, and then I'm going to read this again to make sure that I've actually read it and I haven't just scanned my eyes across the page. Because I do think it can be a difficult thing. And if there's no accessible way to get into poetry, I think that's really difficult. I don't see how someone would get into poetry, especially because of how it's marketed in bookshops,
Yeah.
because there is just a poetry section and it's like one wall and it's all mishmashed together. There's no like, well, this is more like classical poetry and here's some contemporary poetry and this poetry here is actually all about love and this poetry is all queer and this is actually all fantasy based.
Yeah.
It's just poetry. Like that is completely inaccessible to approach it that way.
Absolutely. I mean, it's quite daunting to look at all of that and think, my God, like, where do I start? And also, yeah, you're right to recognize that reading a fiction book, or a novel is completely different to how you would read poetry. I could, happily read a novel in a couple of days, but a poetry book I'm going to spend a bit longer on because you do want to sit with it and actually make sure you're getting the meaning from it and thinking about the pace and how somebody would read it, what emphasis needs to be on what. And it's an entirely different process, isn't it?
Yeah, I find that if I'm on my own, I won't do this in public. I prefer to read poetry books out loud.
Same.
Even if it's, poetry that is just like, this is definitely a page poem, I read the pauses and the line breaks much better if I do it out loud.
Is it because your brain does want to scan words because that's what, we have to do 99% of the time when we're reading something.
Yeah.
Interesting. Super interesting. Do you have any recommendations for someone who isn't necessarily into poetry and might be considering a little dabble?
That is a good question.
It is a good question. Not to put you on the spot.
I mean, honestly, I would say Alice Goldman of Written Off Publishing. There.
We need to get like a written off jingle that I can put on the podcast every time someone mentions it.
Yeah. It's just someone saying like all the website URL like really quickly. Alice Goldman's book, I'm gonna say it wrong now. The Book of Seeing Past the Shadows, and all the poems are set out as spells.
Oh.
And honestly, I think it's so clever. Because before the poem, I say, but it is a part of the poem as well, there's an ingredients list, and the ingredients are like a poem in itself. But for me, as an enjoyer of fantasy and sci-fi and all that sort of, it's escapism. Something that takes you out of the world that you're in. I think it's perfect, because it's not just straight fantasy. Like it's a window of this is escapism, but actually does tell you more about the world you're in and about how, your own feelings. And then occasionally you're like, but this one is just about cake.
I love that. Do you know what? One of my favorite poems is by Neil Gaiman and it's Instructions. And it's kind of like you're walking through a fairy tale land. But actually, I mean, you can read it like that, of course, but you can also kind of see, as you say, like, what does that mean for the real world and how you would navigate the real world and how would you would behave,
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the wonderful thing about fantasy in general, is that it is trying to say something about the world, but also it's trying to not make you bogged down with the world either.
Exactly. Yeah, it gives you the tools to solve all the shit when you re-emerge from the wonderful novel you're reading.
Yes, exactly. That was so wonderfully put.
Oh, well, thank you. It was eloquent and had to include a swear word because I'm not that smooth. Do you write fantasy as well, science fiction and fantasy, or are you just poetry?
Well, a lot of my poetry does draw on that kind of thing. I have done, but I'm not the most resilient at sticking with a longer piece of prose. I would love to someday. I think it's something I'd need to chip away at little by little.
I think it depends on what resources you have as well. And I think if you're trying to spin a lot of creative plates, particularly, because I think if you have like one creative project or one creative form, and then you're also doing other things which are like maybe less creative, I think that's fine. But as soon as you start spinning multiple creative plates, that way is burnout, you know?
Yeah. Well, that is why we've stopped doing the monthly open mics with Bone Down.
Okay.
But we were doing monthly open mics, and then we were also doing socials, and then occasionally we'd be asked to do an event by like someone local, and we'd be like, yeah, we'll do that. And then we're also doing the zine. And at the time, both me and Fern weren't based in Leeds. Me and Kate, sorry, weren't based in Leeds. And it just meant like there was so much to do, and I was also doing uni, and it was just trying to balance all the plates, and we just couldn't. Like it was just it was impossible, and it was really difficult. And it was getting to the point where I was hosting a Bone Down open mic, and then afterwards I would have no idea how it had gone. Like I'd be like, I know that people read, and I know it went how it's supposed to go, but I don't know if the kind of magic that I felt at that first Bone Down, I don't know if it was there because I couldn't feel it, because it was just another event that in the many events that I'm doing.
There's that element of like you're just a little bit exhausted and trying to get through to the end and hope everything goes
Yeah,
well.
absolutely. So we did the anniversary Bone Down in September. So zine launch was August, then anniversary Bone Down was September, and that was when we announced we're going to do them quarterly now. So January just gone was our first open mic back again, and we did do a cabaret night in November as well. Which that was a big step as well, because we'd never done an event like that before. Because even though the zine launch was like a huge event, with basically every event that we'd done before was in that zine launch. Like we, the workshops, platforming musicians, platforming poetry, platforming noise bands, having food as well, the picnic element. But then the cabaret night, whole new kettle of fish. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's a huge undertaking, especially when you're doing other things in your life as well. How do you avoid creative burnout?
Well,
Asking for a friend.
I kind of feel with me for burnout, it's kind of a give and take. Sometimes I just let it happen. And I shouldn't really.
No,
But
I understand.
I think it's kind of you can't hold it off forever, just because of the way the world is. Like if doing poetry things and doing events was all you were doing, I think it would be possible. But because you also have to like work a job and go and buy food and do laundry, like it seems really little, but it's like the smallest things for me that I'm like, okay, that's the final straw. I need to now lie
No, listen,
down.
I understand. I have one kind of, this is so silly, sorry, tangent, but I have one kind of washing detergent that I'm not allergic to. And we ran out. And so we didn't have washing detergent for like a week, but it meant
Oh.
that it's now 2.5 weeks later and I'm still trying to work through the backlog.
Yeah,
And it's like really like I feel overwhelmed.
I find that, forget the creative element of the burnout, just burnout in general. And sometimes, I guess if you're getting burnout with general world things, then sometimes the creative side of it can be the only thing that's sort of keeping you going and pulling you out the other side. Like with writer's block, people say write through it. Like even if it's only a little bit. I'm not saying just keep going till you just burn out more. But sometimes a creative pursuit that isn't the one that's burning you out Like a distraction. I guess it's the balance of writing and being creative as a hobby, and writing and being creative as a thing that you want to go somewhere and you want to make something and spend the time on it to make it great and how it should be. But I think just not being too strict on yourself and not being too strict with your writing routine or your creative routine. Because I find on the days where I'm like, okay, I have to write for like 5 hours today, I'm way less likely to do it if I'm giving myself that time frame than if I'm like, I'm going to do some writing today, and it might be for 5 minutes and it might be for 5 hours. Kind of just not being too hard on myself and not setting the expectations too high. Not giving myself too many plates.
Too many plates. Oh my gosh. I think the difficulty arises is when you have an idea for a project and you're like, oh my God, that would be amazing. But then you have ideas for like two other projects and they would also be amazing. So then you're like, I need to achieve all of these right now to a state of perfection. But I also need to buy food and do the laundry.
Exactly.
Burnout, am I right?
Yeah,
So, are people surprised with how much you have done at such a young age?
definitely, I think so. I get underestimated quite a lot, I think. I was at an open mic once, and I got talking to one of the poets afterwards because I'd seen them at an event before, and they didn't remember me, which is fine. But then their husband said, "Well done for having a go."
That's outrageous.
Yes, I was a bit peeved. Not that I, but it's a thing that I've got a lot. I think because of being quite young and being femme presenting, I think people assume that I don't know what I'm doing. Which that was happening before I was part of Bone Down as well. But then going from being a performer and people assuming that, oh, you've not done this before, this is your first time, to then being a key organizer in a group that puts on events and still having people assume that I'm not really taking a lead on anything or making key decisions. When the thing about Bone Down is that it's non-hierarchical. Although Kate is the founder and I love her to bits, they are an absolute rock in getting stuff done and just being a pro at everything they do. I'd be here without them. But I think a lot of people assume that it's Kate and their committee, not Bone Down, the Bone Down committee that happens to include Kate as well as other people like me.
Oh, we love a non-hierarchical structure. That is fabulous.
Yes, it is wonderful. And it's great because it means people from the community can get involved, and not just in reading at events, but if someone from the community would decided, look, I want to put this event on, do you think you guys could help me put that on and do that with that is something that we would want to do because we want to support our community and build up our community, because that's one of the main things about Bone Down is platforming voices that might not otherwise get platformed. Which, yeah, that's a thing that's really important to me individually as well. Otherwise I wouldn't be involved in Bone Down. I mean, if Kate hadn't platformed me by asking me to be part of the community, then I probably wouldn't even be in events organizing.
That's the wonderful thing, isn't it? Like one person encourages you and then you encourage someone else and then it just keeps going and rolling, which is great.
Yeah, and that's the important thing, especially when there are people who talk down to you and patronize you, that There are also people who support you and build you up.
It's really interesting. I had this conversation with an older poet as well, and yeah, there's still definitely misogyny, prejudice against people who are femme presenting in the poetry community, unfortunately. But the ageism question is such an interesting one, because this older poet's view was actually that, oh God, no, like every time we see a young poet, we kind of assume that they're going to be like better than us, or like more kind of like knowledgeable or experienced, because there are so many more opportunities for young people now, maybe than there were like 20 years ago for like people in the poetry community. Do you see that?
I mean, I see how there's definitely a lot of opportunities specifically geared towards young people, which is really great. I mean, that there is also the thing of a lot of those opportunities also require you to have money
Yeah.
in order to do those. But there's also a lot of opportunities that don't involve that, which is really great, and is great for getting people into poetry. I mean, I definitely think ageism goes both ways as well. I definitely think there can be the assumption that, oh, you see an older poet, you might not think they're very good, which is silly because it should be a blank slate. It should be like on The Voice, where the whole audience is facing the other way, and then no one's going to make any snap judgments about whoever's on the stage. And that would be great. But unfortunately, we live in a society and we're all hardwired to make assumptions about people. Which I think, yeah, the moral of the story here is just don't make assumptions about people that have no basis.
Yeah, just don't be a dick.
Yeah, it's so simple.
It's so simple. I think lockdown was really good for challenging that. So we set up Rebel Riot Poetry online night during lockdown, and we ran it for a couple of years. And it was fantastic, because the age range we had people in their teens and people in, all the way through to their 70s. And you never knew like what you were gonna get. And we got such this incredible blend of like, people trying poetry for the first time of all ages. And I think lockdown was really great for that, actually, seeing so many people in their 40s, 50s, 60s going, oh, hang on, I'm gonna have a go at this writing thing, and then sharing it. It was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely do get a fair bit of that at Bone Down because I was saying in the first half before that originally we were getting a lot of students, but then we also get, well, people like Keith. I don't know how old Keith is. I'm not going to speculate, but Keith has come to every Bone Down since December 2022.
Wow.
And even when everyone else there might be a student, which is not normally the case, we normally get quite a good blend of ages. But I think it's great that not only we have people of different ages performing, but just people of different ages like interacting and sharing their perspectives and being able to talk about art and poetry. The same as the written off publishing, the online open mics that they do, which I've moderated a fair few of those. And it's always great the range we get, the range of not only age and but like poet experience as well, like how long they've been performing.
Yeah, it feels like a much more like natural way of having a community, rather than having this like weird kind of implied like age segregation almost.
I think if you're not talking to people that are different from you in all ways, then you're not getting the real human experience. You're in your own bubble.
Yeah, exactly. And poetry is like wonderful for smashing down those barriers.
Because I did some uni open mics. I hosted a good chunk of them while I was there. And they were great, and it was great for people to showcase their work and stuff like that. But the thing about the uni open mics is that they were purely there for to give people experience in performing. Like it was kind of almost like a practice performance area. But I feel like we managed to do that at Bone Down without that as the kind of this is why we're doing this. Every single Bone Down that we've done, we've had people who've never performed before, which is really great. It's really wonderful. Like, I'm glad that people feel that the space is welcoming enough and safe enough that they can perform for the first time. It's really special.
Absolutely. And it's so important that, that way of being able to express yourself. And you're right, like it's one thing to kind of begin writing for yourself and no one else sees it, but when you start sharing and opening up and kind of like networking with people, it's a different experience entirely.
Yeah, and I think it's only possible if you do feel you're in a space where people aren't making snap judgments and assumptions about what sort of thing you're going to read before you've even read it.
Oh, it sounds like you and Kate and the rest of the committee have really created that with Bone Down.
Yeah, I think we have. I know my mum, when she's come to stuff before, she always says, "Don't change what you're going to read just because I'm there." Because she's worried because she's older that people aren't gonna do poems about sex when even though that might be what they normally read. She's like, I don't want people to feel like my presence is changing their like self-expression and what they
Oh,
want
that's
to do.
lovely. No, that is lovely of her. So I don't know if you saw, but JP Seabright and I have just got a little bit of funding and we're applying for more funding. And we've got some very other exciting news which we have to sit on for a while to create a queer mad crip erotic poetry anthology. And my husband is so proud that he's phoned his parents up and he's told them. And they're like, oh, we can't wait to like come to the launch event and read it. And I was like, did you mention that it's about fucking? Like, it's lovely that you're supportive, but oh, Jesus.
My nan, I did like a mini poetry reading at her house once, because a bunch of my relatives were there and a lot of them hadn't heard me read before. And I did do an edited down set. I was like, I am going to take some of these poems out and not read them. But eventually, when I get published, she's going to buy the book. Like, I can't stop that. I don't want to stop that.
Just say, please don't read pages 42, 37. Oh, no, I mean, I'm sure everyone is going to be supportive and wonderful anyway, but when is your book coming out?
Not until next March. So I don't even know if it's like announced yet.
Only a year away.
Yeah, it's a year away, which is kind of mad because when I found out about it, that was last year. So last year it felt like ages away. And now I'm like, oh, but that's now a year away. That seems way less. Because even though it was like sort of November, December, I was still like, oh, it's 2 years away. But it wasn't 2 years away, not really.
How do you
But
feel about like knowing that? I mean, because you're going to be, most people are like an entirely different person in a year's time. And certainly, in terms of your writing, that's going to have developed. You're going to have, improved or like honed things in a certain way. How do you feel about poems that you wrote however many years ago coming out in a year's time?
well, the thing about this manuscript is that a lot of the poems that are in it are poems that I haven't even written that recently. So they're already like they feel like a different person has written them. And then in a year's time, I'm gonna be like a whole different person twice over.
And you're gonna have to sell them still. You're gonna have to be like, these are fucking amazing. And it'll be a completely different style.
I've got to regain confidence in them. I think they're a time capsule of the person you were then. I did edit a lot of them a fair bit. But then some of them, one of them is like probably the oldest poem that will be getting published. That is one that I don't think I've changed a word of. Like some of them, it is like no, this can't be edited. And then
Yeah.
some of them are like, okay, I'm gonna let myself rearrange the shit out of this because I do not know what was going through my head here.
A time capsule of who you were at the time is such a lovely way of looking at it, though. So mine is coming out in December, and some of the poems I wrote like 4 or 5 years ago. And the anxiety is really strong. But if I look at it as a time capsule, that's actually, yeah, that's really lovely.
I mean, I do worry that I'm worried that people are going to read them and be like, is this about me?
Ha. Oh God. Oh no, I hadn't even thought of that. Thank you for unlocking that fear.
I mean, my kind of thought is like the people that I'm probably worried about reading them probably aren't going to read them. Like, they're not going to.
That's a really good point. Yeah, I won't send a copy to my ex-girlfriend, for instance.
Yeah.
Oh
Yeah,
God.
you've got to curate the circle of people who are buying. If you just buy all of your own book, then
Yeah, that's
no
one
one
way of
can make
doing
any judgments on them at all.
it. Oh my God, I sold 100 copies to myself. Oh my God. Speaking of poems, have you got a poem to share with us today?
I do indeed. So I'm gonna read one of my dinosaur poems, which, so I did a pamphlet a couple of years ago that I took to different events and stuff that I was doing, and it was really cool because it had like a dinosaur on the front and like in his mouth was where my name was, and I should definitely like re-release it at some point, but
Oh my God, yeah, do.
but this one is called Tea Time. And it goes like this. It's a better dinosaur than I that eats cabbage. It's a habit I won't encourage or get into, though I inhabit a forest rich in leaves. I cannot bring myself a single one to eat. And it's not that I can't reach, it's just I'd rather eat my feet than waste a single second on a second-rate leaf. But my dad says that's what us sauropods eat. And the starving dinosaurs in Africa, to which I said, "What's Africa?" And he didn't look up from his newspaper, but I don't think he knew either. Though he said, "Just wait till the tectonic plate shifts, son, then you'll see." Then he ate my cabbage whole, and I started on the peas with a little more ease than before.
I'm really glad I muted myself because I laughed so hard. That is excellent. That's so good.
Thank you.
I can understand why you surprise an audience when you come out with something like that.
Yeah, I think the tectonic plates line gets people sometimes. It might be my favorite line of that
It's brilliant. Definitely re-release this pamphlet, please, because that would be excellent.
poem.
So normally I ask my wonderful podcast guests if they were going to be a mythical creature, what would they be? Mainly because I am a dragon, because as a non-binary pansexual disabled person living in Tory Britain, I feel like a mythical creature. I mean, dinosaurs are extinct, so I kind of feel like that has some relevance for like what the Tories are trying to do to queer people. But if you're a mythical creature or a dinosaur, I'll let you choose between the two. What would you be and why?
Well, let me have a think in terms of mythical creatures. The thing is about mythical creatures is that whatever I'm going to pick, it's going to be something that is vaguely cat-like.
Ooh.
Because I just feel like cats are so cool anyway, and they're so chill, and they're just sleeping and eating, and that's great. But then a mythical cat, it's that, but also you kind of have special powers.
Yeah.
A sphinx is pretty cat-like, right?
Yeah, it's pretty cat. Well, I mean, yeah, traditionally.
Yeah, I might already be a bit of a sphinx because I just spout nonsense all the time and confuse people.
Do you give people riddles though, or is it just unintentional riddles?
Unintentional riddles. But
Love
I also love the idea of a sphinx that doesn't know that they're speaking in riddles.
that. Or a sphinx that like doesn't have the answer to the riddles.
Yeah. It's like, well, how do I get past it? Like, I don't know. Like,
Okay, cool. So a sphinx because they're cool and cat-like and
Yeah.
spout monster. Excellent. I love that. That is brilliant. Alex, have you got any final words of wisdom?
I would say, if you don't think that you're a poet, give it some time. Have a read, have a listen, to poets and to the world around you, and have a go. And you might find that you are a poet, just not in the way that you thought, that you think poetry should be.
I love that. That is excellent advice to anyone out there. Woo! Do you have anything you want to promote?
If you want to find more about Bone Down events, we are on Instagram and on Twitter as Bone Down LAG, which stands for Literary Affinity Group. I am on Instagram as poetry underscore ditties. Also, if you follow Written Off Publishing on Instagram,
I'm going to start charging them.
well, you'll see that they do monthly open mics, and you'll be able to see those, which I quite often am a moderator of, and you'll see me there just chatting shit in the group chat and moderating and also doing things. But yeah,
Wonderful.
that's where you can find me.
That is wonderful. Alex, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been delightful to chat with you.
Thanks for having me. It's been wonderful.